Wow, I'm probably, AI is literally how I do everything. It's literally how I do everything. Oh, the workflow is so much different. Now I'm able to take on more clients. I'm able to do more things faster and better. But it's a long 2-year journey trying to figure out the parts, trying to see which AI likes the best. Some AI don't. I use ChatGPT for research organization, things like that. Perplexity is a great tool for that. Claude is my go-to for anything that has to do with voice. It's the best writer on the market, in my opinion.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the AI Marketing Navigator. This is your daily compass in the ever-evolving world of AI marketing. Okay, navigators, today we are cutting through the marketing noise with someone who's been called a Jedi Master of content marketing. Our guest is Doug Lawson, a strategic content marketing expert who's generated over $20 million in revenue for his clients in just the last 3 years. Doug brings a rare perspective to the marketing world. He is a former special education teacher turned marketing strategist who now helps high-ticket consultants and service providers create content that actually drives revenue, not just engagement. Also, as a deaf individual, he offers a unique insight into communication accessibility and how AI is reshaping the marketing landscape and the accessibility landscape. Doug is also known for his straight-talking approach. I am a huge fan of his content and his writing and his signature boom philosophy and for challenging conventional marketing wisdom. He doesn't believe in the spray and pray, the posting or chasing of viral content. Instead, he focuses on creating strategic content ecosystems that match buyer psychology and connect businesses to the exact decision makers they need to reach. Doug, welcome to the show. I am so thrilled to dive in with you today and extract some of that marketing wisdom that you are so well known for.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. And what an incredible intro. You said it better than me.
Hey, it's all well earned too. So anyway, let's start kind of just with your marketing journey. Starting from the classroom, going to the content world, you spent those 7 years as a special education teacher before kind of pivoting to marketing. Can you tell me a little bit about what prompted that transition and how has your background in education influenced your marketing approach?
Yeah. So 13 years ago, let's go back more than 13 years ago. So my oldest kid is 16 years old. So probably 16 years ago. So I was a teacher, as you mentioned. I don't know if you know, but teachers don't get paid. If they get paid, it's pretty mediocre.
Not enough.
I'll be honest, 16 years ago, I was working 60 hours a week, teaching, grading papers, homework assignments, all this extra stuff. I made $44,000 a year. $44,000 a year. So it doesn't matter how hard I worked, I was going to make $44,000 a year. And then my wife got pregnant for the second time, and we had my daughter, Emma. And so now the pressure is really on. Now, twice the diaper, twice the food, twice the clothes. We need a second bedroom and make $44,000 a year. And my wife teacher too, so she's making $38,000. And so we use $38,000. So I had a choice. Do I go find a second job? So not only do I work from 7 a.m. to 3:30, 4 p.m., run to the second job, work another shift to make up the difference. And originally, that's exactly what I did. So I worked at Target. I was stocking shelves. I delivered newspapers. I did a whole bunch of stuff after school, sometimes night shift. And it was like, okay, so I never see my kids. I never see my wife. And I'm making the crappiest money you could ever make. And something's got to change. Something has to change. So I set a challenge for myself. Okay, I got to find a way to make money from home. And this is not another making money from home scheme. It's literally what I said. I said, I have to make money from home. I want to be alone, my kids, my wife. But I have to make up the $38,000 somehow. Because my wife said, I don't know if you know, I don't know if you have kids, but daycare, it's basically a second mortgage. So daycare for crazy. Two kids is something like $2,000 a month. So what is the point? So long story short, I'm on Twitter. So there's a lot of guys on Twitter back in the day, almost 14 years ago. And then all these guys are making money. Like they're selling e-books or e-programs. There's Russell Brunson coming on the market. There's these passive income guys. They're just making money on Twitter. I mean, okay, what are they doing? So long story short, it was just like I learned copywriting. I learned the term copywriting. Like, okay, I'm not a bad writer. I can write. But what is copywriting? Like everybody, they think copywriting is talking about like, copywriting law that you can't copy. And make, so I dove into all. So making words sell products or websites. Okay, so again, long rabbit hole. I fell down multiple rabbit holes trying to only copy.
No.
I got books. I got YouTube at that time was not a big thing. So everything we had to learn was through ebooks. Like you had to get a lot of ebooks. You're just grabbing whatever you can, trying to put it together. So again, I'm shorting the time frame. So I got a sense of it. Then I just started promoting on Twitter really badly.
Right.
But then kind of trying to understand the game and then realizing that I need to have a niche. So at that time, email marketing, God, email marketing is still incredibly important. But at that time, email marketing was king. It was exactly what everybody wanted. So I learned how to make email scripts or sequences or all that stuff. So I started promoting to chiropractor or doctors who had their own private practices, not like big doctors, like private practice doctors, or DPT, so doctors of physical therapy. So number one thing they sucked at, they suck at marketing. So you could be the worst copywriter, it's still better than their writing, because they don't write.
Yeah.
If they do write, they don't say anything. So that's how I started. So it's a kind of a long, twisting road. But in about 2 years of doing that, not only have we paid my wife's income, okay, we got that. I started replacing my own teaching income. So now, it's 44. It's like, okay, I got something here. So the last part of your question, how does it influence? How did my teaching influence content marketing? That honestly didn't come up to much later when I start coaching clients on how to do this.
I see.
So at the beginning, I didn't coach anyone. It was just like, hey, make me a welcome sequence, or hey, make me that. Sure, I tape it all out, organize it, upload it for them. And so teaching didn't come into the picture until maybe 5 years ago. So that's a very long answer. I hope that helps.
No, absolutely. Thank you so much for it. It helps and sounds like it reflects a lot of people's journey into the work from home / marketing / digital space as well. And congratulations on the last couple of years. That's so amazing to hear. Now, getting into some of the businesses that you've actually worked with, it's been a range of businesses, like you said, starting with doctors and private practices and in the medical field like that. I love what you say about finding a niche that it's particularly not going to be a strong writing niche, and absolutely reflect everything you have said about copywriting too. I have developed my skills as a technical marketer very well, but with the launch of the agency and the podcast, I've learned very quickly that writing and copywriting is, I don't know, I'm going to go out on a limb and say maybe the most important skill for a marketer to have, and it's very, very much trying to hone that as well. So, and respect and love your copy so much on your LinkedIn page. It's one of the reasons that wanted me to get you on this show so badly. Anyway, back to the range of businesses. You've helped small businesses, drop shipping stores, all the way up to seven-figure brands. Can you tell me how your copywriting differs for those small stores to the enterprise big brands? Is there a different way when you approach the writing, or is it the same? Is it the same concise boom methodology that you use for a Walmart that you would use for a mom and pop shop?
No, honestly, I would say no. I know that's shocking. I would actually say no, because the day you start thinking, well, I'm working on an enterprise account, so I have to change the way I do that. Oh, I'm working for a doctor of one, and he has like 20 patients. I have to change the way I do things. Actually, it has nothing to do with the size of the company you work for. Who is the customer? Who are we trying to take? It's that one person. Obviously, some people have multiple ICPs, but generally speaking, you're talking one person at a time. And that never changes whether you're on a massive account or whether you're on a small account. You are only taking one person. So, in a lot of ways, I think people get all tripped up when they start working. So, TypeOfAgone is a mid-market company. We're talking $100 million big company. That's what we call mid-market. Sort of strategy with copywriting, as I did with the doctors I mentioned, why I'm able to put industries and niche and vertical, because it's not about your product or account or whatever you're doing. It's all about the reader, the one person who's reading this piece of content. Now, what's changing? Maybe so typically bigger companies have more money to spend, so they need they need blog, they need website copy, they need social copy, they need email copy. Well, versus that one small account, they don't have the budget to do all of that. That changed, however, with AI. But going back, maybe 5 years ago, you had to have a budget to dominate your vertical. But now, that story is totally flipped on its head.
Absolutely. Great segue into talking about the fun stuff and what we're all about on the show, which is AI and AR marketing. When did you first start incorporating AI tools into your marketing workflows and your processes? And what kind of prompted that decision to start using AI?
So I would say AI. So I'm kind of a stubborn old bull. So I'm not a young guy anymore. So I'm the guy who gets upset with kids walking on my glass, you know. So I was a little late to the game. I'm not terribly late, just a smidge late. So the younger people learned AI much quicker, and they started experimenting much quicker, and they started building these great props and workflows and workshops, giving it all away. They would just give it all away on Twitter. And I was looking at it like, I'm just going to do what I do. But so, long story short, I started using ChatGPT first. That was my first AI tool for writing. And it sucked. It was so bad that I actually hated it for the long time. So I gave it up. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to stick to what I do. The only thing I would use ChatGPT for is to kind of do some quick research, or instead of me having to listen to hours of interviews and surveys and focus groups and sales calls, I could just take the transcript. Well, at that time, you couldn't just dump it on chat. You had to get another code to kind of have a long script for. So I used it first. So instead of spending 2-3 hours listening to sales call, it took me 10 minutes. And I was prompted to, as a marketer, when we get on sales call, we're looking for voice of the customer, pinpoint, we're looking at the way they say things, we're looking at who they've worked with before, we're looking at the way they describe your competitor, we're looking for language. So I would tell ChatGPT to isolate the actual language. I'm kind of jumping the gun here, but what most people do wrong today with AI is that they give the transcript to AI, or they don't. And they make AI make the content, which is the wrong way to do it. You have to tell AI, isolate these variables for me. Tell me what they are. Pull them out for me. and you get to see, okay, now incorporate them into X, Y, and Z. So, now I'm probably, AI is literally how I do everything. Oh, the workflow is so much different. Now I'm able to take on more clients. I'm able to do more things faster and better. But it's a long 2-year journey trying to figure out the prompts, trying to see which AI likes the best. Some AI don't. So I use ChatGPT for research organization, things like that. Perplexity is a great tool for that. Claude is my go-to for anything that has to do with voice. It's the best writer on the market, in my opinion. So it's a long, twisting angle. So we can get more specific with specific questions. But for the last 2 years, tons of experimenting, tons of prompt engineering, tons of joining private programs and learning how other people prompt the tool, and also learning at the end of the day. At the end of the day, if you're going to use AI as a marketer, you are the craftsman. Do not depend on AI to craft things for you. AI is a tool, much like a blacksmith back in the 1500s hammering away. I mean, the hammer is just a tool. You are the blacksmith. You tell the hammer what part of the sword you're trying to bang out to make shape the way you want. I think a lot of people and the AI craze can make a tons of content, but they don't know how to hammer content to do it in the way that's most effective for persuasion and strategy. So I love to talk, but that's my long
answer. That is an amazing answer, and I appreciate so much. It reflects so much of what we talk about on the show. You started by saying that AI was almost a distraction, and it was, and you decided to focus in on what you were doing. I respect that so much. And we talk about how trying to learn and keep up with AI, especially back then, a couple of years ago, but definitely now too, was like drinking from a fire hose, almost impossible to keep up with. There was a new tool, a new way of doing things every single day that would try and pull you away from what you were doing. And so it takes a lot of discipline to stay focused on what you're doing there as well. And I also love how you mentioned that it was a 2-year journey to figure out what AI could actually do that was helpful. Again, there's so many hype use cases out there, and the real skill, I think, of someone in this current era is to be able to focus, for one, but determine what AI tools actually help them accomplish the things they need to do. And then I also love what you said about the AI isn't going to, you still need to have the ability to recognize good content and good outputs and good, the what looks good. If you can't, you're not going to be able to tell the AI what to do and what you need. And so it's 100% a tool, just like you said, a tool that can either be used well or used poorly. And I think that's like, it's kind of what I'm going to get into with my next question here, where you've described AI as a terrible servant on its own, but a powerful master when wielded by someone who knows what they're doing. Can you kind of walk us through what you mean by that? And then you've said, like, you use Claude mostly for your writing. First of all, Claude is also my absolutely main go-to for writing. But can you maybe also give us a little insight into, let's say you're writing a new email marketing campaign. What are the steps you go through to get prepared to prompt Claude to do that for you?
So I think also how to answer this is to kind of explain it. The way I find clients and other marketers who I mentor, how they do it wrong. So, and what I do. So most people, they will write an email sequence, they'll prompt the AI, they'll say something like, hey, I'm writing for so-and-so, this is what we're doing, this is the offer. So they're telling you, they're giving you context. And they say, can you make me a top performing email sequence using Alex Hormozy, Labor Hook, and maybe Ben Shadow style voice. And so and then they'll spread out everything, and they'll take that and they'll load it up. Look, this is where I learned what my unfair advantage is, which is I don't know what makes good content. I've seen it. I've done it manually for years. AI is a multiplier. So if you want to multiply garbage, well, you're going to get hundreds of pieces of garbage. If you multiply correct use content, you're going to get hundreds of correct use content. So let's back up. First, that email sequence. So I speak with the subject matter expert first in person. So I have a call with the client and I say, hey, who's the subject matter expert on that? So depending on size, sometimes it's the founder themselves. Sometimes it's a sales guy. Sometimes it's somebody else on the team. So whoever the subject matter expert is, I interview them first. I turn on the recording using note-taking device. I had very specific questions, the same questions I've been using for years before AI to help myself, right? So instead of me writing, you take the question and they're going to answer it very specifically, usually around the ICP, usually around pain points, usually around case studies and business cases. So I want to hear it from the voice of the subject matter expert. Take that. Then I take sales calls. So I ask, can I have access to the last 5 sales calls, however many? I take the transcript from that. I load it up in ChatGPT. I organize it in a way that gets it ready for Claude. ChatGPT organizes it. Claude finishes up. Then once I set that up, I have a prompt for Claude with the information ChatGPT made for me, and then I generate the content, and then from the content, I pull it out. Unfortunately, AI can't edit itself, so I go through all the lines of copy and editing it. So I would say, on a good day, 10% edit job. Oh, 100, I have to fix 10% of it. On a bad day, AI can screw up to 30%. So you really have to be a craftsman the whole way through. So that's a very simple way of doing that. So taking transcript, sales call, asking the right question, knowing to what to look for in the transcript and telling AI to go find it is absolutely critical. And then get it ready for Claude and let Claude do it with the right prompt, spread it out correctly. And then you have to be the craftsman after that. And so that's typically how I would write an email sequence.
Awesome. Awesome. No, that's so, so valuable. And starting with the human content and the human element and bringing that to the AI instead of the opposite, I think is a great takeaway here.